Hey, see you again, people. Hope you're okay. And don't forget, we've done a big revamp on the Radio Warwickshire website, so go and check that out. There's some really good stuff on there. Search for me, Kurt Pickstone, and I'm responsible for... Yeah, bringing you interesting guests every week, interesting stories. The ultimate aim is to inspire and help you on your journey, whatever that is. So yeah, if you've got any suggestions for the site, if you want any music playing on some of the other shows, go and check them out. There's a contact form on the website. That's radiowarwickshire.com. Check it out. Why not listen to us on the player as well? Yeah, on tonight's show, I'm bringing you Tass Thornton. I went to see her the other week and solely to watch her speak and then afterwards to conduct this interview. I really enjoyed meeting her, really enjoyed the time together. We had a bit of a giggle afterwards and we did another thing which I'll bring as a podcast special. But without further ado, let's get on with the show. Well, like I say, I've got Tass with me here, and you know, this show's about business, adversity and dyslexia, and Tass has got an amazing backstory as well. I think she's a tremendous individual, and she's got very pink hair. So, yeah, like you do. But yeah, Tass, thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, so, what I mean, just briefly to talk to about before, can you, you've got a great backstory, and I'll talk about what you've been talking about today, about people... being themselves, really, I suppose.
I think there's still a big problem with people not quite knowing who they are. I think we live in a society where we are conditioned to become what we think we should be.
Yeah.
And we so regularly lose touch with what's inside. We've got this, I call it a head-heart disconnect. And we get to the point where we're operating from our brains all the time and we forget to get in touch with our heart. And I know that sounds a bit hippie-fied, but that's okay because I am a bit hippie-fied. And I went through that journey too, but I've got to the point now where I can look back at my life and look at some of the adversity that's been in my own life, and instead of going, woe is me, I'll think, well, okay, why did that happen? What was the teaching in it? And how do I move on from there? So in a nutshell, you know, I haven't got forever, you know, it's things like coming through an abusive relationship, taking ridiculous risks to try and get out of life because I didn't know what else to do.
Yeah.
Crashed my car, broke my back in three places. I went through a breakdown, depression, went through a spate of being suicidal. I was stopped from let's just say, wrapping a karate belt around my neck and jumping when a friend of mine texted me. I thought she'd be asleep when I told her I was going, but she wasn't.
Mm.
All kinds of things. And I look back now and think that was some of those things were the best things that ever happened to me. So after I broke my back, for instance, I'd crashed into this ditch, ditched the car. I actually went into work that day, and I was in publishing at the time, and my editor said I'd had a bit of a rough morning, so we should go and have a drink at lunchtime. So at lunchtime we walked about a mile to the pub and then about a mile back, and it got to about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I thought, oh, my back's hurting.
Yeah.
And the same day when I'd walked to and from the pub, I was lying on a flatbed with my head packed in sandbags for 9 hours.
Wow.
And there is nothing quite as clarifying for your thoughts as seeing men in white coats milling around talking spinal damage. And in that moment when I could see my mum's shocked expression and hear them talking about spinal damage, because the only thing you think about is, oh my goodness, I've tried to kill myself and ended up just breaking my back and now I'm really trapped.
Oh yeah, because that's like a living hell then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you've not escaped this madness or this thing that you're doing. You've actually trapped yourself even more, where you're even more restrictive.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
How did that make you feel then?
Well, in that moment, that's when I discovered hope, because suddenly, in that clarity, thinking, "What have you done, you idiot?" That's when I realised, "Come on, there's more to life than this." And I could have just lain back and taken it. Well, actually, I couldn't you, do you much had to other than lying down for a while. Or I could think, well, hold on, this is a sign, this is a warning, this is a proper kick up the backside to get up and do something with your life.
Yeah.
So that's what I did, and now that was one of the best things I think that ever happened to me, because it just said, come on, do something, change.
Yeah, I've interviewed a couple of people, and my own personal journey, and there's a couple of low points in my life, and the most recent one got me to the point where I could have chose to... Well, there's only two ways to go. One was out and one was on.
Yeah.
And I chose on. And, yeah. And that, what it did for me, and it's done for you, is a big word now, metamorphosized into something else.
Yeah.
Whereas people can't see us now, but you're quite bright, quietly, loudly dressed, pink hair, pink whatever, tattoos. Or
me, let the world be well.
Yeah. And same as me, wear me daft T-shirts, and people might at first scratch their head and go, what are you doing? But... this is me, you know what I mean? You've unleashed everything on me, and do you know what? I'm going to unleash everything back, and that's your tagline, isn't it?
Unleash your awesome. Yeah, but you got to do it, you got to move, and I think so many of us ignore the pebbles, and then you get the stones, and then you get the boulders, so I had that, and then I had the situation where everything on paper looked great, but I was still thinking, I just still need to jump, so that was another kick. And then there was for a while I was walking on sticks. I had a complaint with my knees. I've got the x-rays to prove that my patellas are too small to support my weight. And they were talking knee replacements. I was going through physio. But here's the weird thing. When I left the corporate life that was I was unhappy with, I just realised one day that I wasn't walking on the sticks anymore. Now, I can't explain that. Whether it's something to do with some sign about walking in the wrong direction, I don't know.
Mm.
But there are x-rays to prove that I should not be walking on these. Wow. And when my life got happier, suddenly my knees got better. I can't explain that one.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to recount some other stories where I've heard people talk about similar things where that sort of happened. Mm. And yeah, there's a lot of mind over matter, isn't there?
You know,
a marathon runner, you know, we shouldn't be able to run... do a marathon, should we? Or some people do marathons every day for a month. You should physically not be able to do that.
Yeah,
your body wants to say, saying, right. Don't do it, don't do it.
There's stories of mums lifting cars off kids and stuff as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's, that. You know, that adrenaline burst at the time, but this long sustained stuff. I just think that we create so many issues for ourselves, and sometimes I think we manifest these problems because we need a way out.
Mm.
Not necessarily the big out, but maybe we're feeling overloaded and we don't feel we can let anybody down and we've got to get all this work done, but there's too much for us to manage. So we materialise some kind of complaint that gives us a genuine excuse to not be able to do it, which gives us the break.
Yeah,
I think we sometimes do that too.
Because we're all under an immense pressure to both conform and also to... We've got these images that we're bombarded with daily from celebrities, from TV, from media, of the perfect you. Facebook. I was listening to a podcast last night, and the it's a facade, isn't it? There's a facade.
What is perfect?
Well, nothing's what you're happy with.
Yeah.
And I went through it a few months ago where I got quite disillusioned with everything because I was seeing what everyone else was doing. And my journey wasn't going where I expected it to go.
Oh, comparison! That'll
and
kill
I was,
you.
And I was like, and I got to the point. I even said to someone, I actually was with Tanya, and I was in the car, and I said, "What I'm going to do, I think I'm not getting where I need to get to. Do you know what? I'm not going to focus on it anymore. I'm going to do this other thing instead." And I don't know what happened, but within 30 seconds of us having that conversation in the car, the phone rang, and it was the BBC wanting to do an interview with me.
Yeah.
So it's like. And it re-energized, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I could have took the wrong step there.
Yeah.
So there'll be people listening who are in a job or in a career or a relationship that are just going with the flow, going with what's been presented to them. And I think that's wrong. I want to stop that from happening. I want to change that.
I think that's a really powerful message, and it's one of the things I'm all about now. So when I hit my breakdown, I now call it my breakthrough.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. I like that. Positive spin on it, a negative. Yeah. I like that.
Again, it made me change. So I'd been through all this. I'd done the broken back stuff. I'd done the wanting to leap off life stuff and all that. And then I got right to the top of the tree in corporate publishing. And it was one of those things, the old classic of getting to the top of the ladder and then realising you're against the wrong wall. That thing.
Yeah.
And I knew that I was just dying from the inside out. But something needed to happen to push me to do something. And I talk about my 8 weeks of hell. So within an 8 week period, my uncle died, my dad died. I had to go away on business a couple of nights after Dad died over to France. And the one night I chose to go away, Mum's house, well, the garden of her house was broken into and burgled. So hello, guilt. Some debts came to light that I hadn't been aware of. So all of a sudden, the safety net I thought I had was gone. Somebody close to me was diagnosed with a nasty health condition. My partner was made redundant, and there was more as well, but this was all in an 8 week period.
Yeah, wow.
And at the end of that, when I found myself sitting under my mum's dining room table, crying and rocking and trying to hide, all something's got to give. And that thing that had to give, it couldn't be me. I couldn't give any more. And I kept going for about four years. I kept working through that breakdown and hiding behind the pinstripe, jacket on in the morning, get into work, get through to lunchtime, go and drive out somewhere, sit, phone home and cry, makeup back on, jacket back on, get through the afternoon, go
waterproof
home,
mascara.
Cry. Waterproof mascara, absolutely. Still wearing it to this day. And it just, something had to give. And
yeah.
Again, I call that now my breakthrough, because yes, I kept going because I was I'm the breadwinner, I've got this wage, I've got the salary, I'm getting bonuses. Why aren't I happy? And it was a process of realising that through that time, the one area that I was kind of getting filled up, the one area where I was feeling happy, was when I was helping other people.
Mm.
So during that time, in that going through the breakdown, I put a lot of emphasis on training in lots of different kind of healing disciplines, if you like. I'd already got all the managerial training through my jobs. I trained in NLP, I trained in coaching, I trained in mentoring. I worked for about a decade with shamans and medicine people. I trained in lots of energy disciplines as well. And by the time I left, I'd got this raft of this new skill set, this new tool bag that I could use and dip in and actually stop people from making the same. I was going to say mistakes, but I don't believe in mistakes.
Hmm. Yeah, because I was asked, I've said it before, I think, but I was asked a bit back when I did a presentation, and they said, all that stuff that's happened here, if you could go back, would you change it? And would it make a difference? And I went, no, I wouldn't change anything that's ever happened to me, because if I had, I wouldn't be who I am. Because
precisely.
We're in this amazing building that we're in today, and there's knocks on the wall, and there's scrapes and scrapes on the floor, and all the rest of it. Now, that's happened over a period of time. It makes it the character that it is.
It's character. It's like patina, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the character. So absolutely right. So if I look back at when I went through the abusive relationship, and it was pretty grim, I now use that. And with my empowerment work, I now work with people who've been through domestic abuse. I work with our local county council. I'm running these seminars for that because The authorities can do so much. They can, for instance, get somebody into a safe house and get them out of the relationship, but there's nothing to give them hope again.
Yeah.
So what's interesting is when I go into that kind of scenario, and it doesn't matter if I'm working with people who've been through an abusive relationship, or if I'm working with business people who are feeling a bit lost, or if I'm working with a corporate team that isn't communicating, at first you walk in and they've all got the kind of arms folded and there's a wall. And the second I start talking and they realise that I've been there, gradually that wall starts to chip away and the light bulb starts to come on, and by the end of that, the change has begun.
Mm.
But I couldn't do all of that if I hadn't been through the things that have happened to me.
Yeah, exactly. And it's good that you're using that experience and that those issues, or whatever you want to call them, for good. And there's a lot of people out there that are probably listening and can relate to that, and hopefully that gives them a spark of I need to find out a bit more about this. I'm stuck in this environment, whether it's a job or whatever. How do I get out of it? And can I get out of it? Because you're right, when I went through my bad times, I was the only one earning as well. And it was almost like I had to keep on carrying on. And it was like, I can't carry on. And it came to a head. And we need to stop people getting to that point where it is comes to a head, where people can make a decision and go, well, actually, let's do something different. Let's change this unhappy state we're in, or whatever it is.
I think there's a big message for employers as well. And there's so much of emphasis now on, you know, their responsibility to their employees who are unhappy, whether it's to do with the job or whether it's home life. But what I recognised is when I was going through my difficult times, and it's not their fault, to be fair, I was wearing such a thick mask, they wouldn't have been able to realise there was anything going on. I remember talking to one of the other directors, there were two of us running the business by the end, and saying, look, I've just been put on antidepressants. And she said, oh, they're giving them out like Smarties nowadays. And at the time, I was quite hurt. But now, looking back, it's no wonder she said that, because I was putting the mask on, and there would have been a massive dichotomy there.
Yeah, because he was the famous guy, Robbie Williams, wasn't it? Robin Williams. You know, one of the funniest men you could meet on the planet, who you think is uber confident. Wow, look at his...
Probably one of the few where everybody loved him across the world.
Look at his life, look at what he's doing. Oh, he's got everything, he's got wealth, he's got, you know what I mean, he's doing all these things.
Yeah.
And absolutely, well, he was suicidal, wasn't he? Because obviously that's what he did. People are very good at masking the problems and hiding.
Are.
We're very good at doing that, and people won't pick up on it. And it's a difficult one to identify, I think.
It's very easy, I think, as an employer to give all your attention to the person who is visibly crying, the one who's found sobbing in the corridor, and that's not to take away from them, but people will have different work ethics. So I didn't show any of this at work because I had a very strong work ethic for me. No, I was being paid to do a job, so I would turn up and somehow I'd get through it and I'd break down at home. But there were a few other people who were going through tough times and their discomfort, their dis-ease was very visible. So, of course, they got all the attention.
Yeah.
And that's not to take away from them at all, but I just think it's something that employers need to be aware of, that if there is some unrest in a business, it's probably not one person, and they need to look at the entire workforce and just keep an eye on that stoic person in the corner as well, because they might just be holding it together in a different way.
Yeah, and from a dyslexic point of view with employers, the same sort of thing there. They're unseen individuals who are probably going through quite a lot of pressure daily, either because they know they're dyslexic or they don't know. And the stigma around that, and the stigma that you're, because it's a stigma to be, I'm depressed, I'm a senior leader, I'm depressed, or I'm a senior manager, I've got dyslexia, and it's a stigma, and we should be. And you asked the question in the presentation you just done, and a lot of people that have not even met themselves openly admitted to things that they wouldn't normally admit. Yeah. If they were in a corporate role, they want to stuck their hands up and said they've taken antidepressants or whatever.
But dyslexia is one of those things. Remember in my early time as a reporter when I was working for local and regional press, I did a lot of work working with the local dyslexia charity that was working a lot with the kids in schools.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of work to either raise money for them or I went in and helped out at the clubs sometimes. And I don't know if it's the same now, but they were saying then one of the big challenges was getting the kids statemented, getting to the point where they could actually say, well, I have this condition. Mm. And there's still, I'm guessing there's loads of adults sitting there who've been hit over the head with a stupid hammer. And it's not that at all. Lazy, stupid. Then you've got dyspraxia as well, which takes it on another step.
Yeah.
How many adults are sitting there struggling? Maybe they don't even know they've got it.
Yeah, exactly. It's that's what I'm trying to do, and you're obviously trying to do from your point of view with your work that you're doing. Which I've seen a few people that have been interacted with you and been on some of your courses, and I can see the difference in those individuals, which before were. We're at a turning point, either getting frustrated with what they were doing, not got much confidence, and I've seen, I won't name names because that's not fair on the individuals, but I can see there's a couple of people, there's one in the room today, and there's another one who's up in the northwest.
Yeah.
You can see the change, because those individuals could be perceived as being, well, what are they going on about, what are they doing, they don't fit into the mould, do they, because of what they're about and what the message they're trying to say.
But here's the thing, I didn't do that, they did it.
Yeah.
And that's the point, I can hit them all with all the extreme empowerment stuff, saying I've got all that thing where I've trained with the same guys that trained Tony Robbins to do the fire walking and the glass walking. It's very, very easy to perceive that as kind of rah, rah, rah American stuff. And it's not. I went and did that training and then deleted all the rah, rah, rah American stuff and built that into the rest of the seminars that I developed. So they're all metaphors. So it's not just about, you know, if you can walk on broken glass, that's great. It doesn't just mean that you can walk barefoot through the pub on a Saturday night. It's not about that. It's about, with the glass walk, for instance, it's a metaphor for concentrating on what you're doing and giving it 100% of your attention. If you're walking over 200 broken bottles, your attention's got to be in your feet. You've got to be focused.
Yeah.
So it teaches focus. And there's all these different metaphors with the different things I do. But the fact is, people come onto those seminars. You've got the thing where they can relate because they know I've been through difficult times. But I'm really big on saying that
this is only any good if when you walk out of those doors, you take the teachings with you. So it's so easy. It's not about whipping somebody up into one of those level 10 states. And, you know, then what happens? Maybe they've been really hyped up. Maybe they've bought the X amount of thousands of pounds thing on sale at the back of the room, which I don't do. But if they're in that great state, they walk out and then say it's been raining and a car goes past and it splashes them and the state's gone.
Yeah, you need to change.
It's sustainable.
Yeah, need to change that mindset. People need to, and people talk about flicking the switch, reprogramming. I used to work for a guy years ago, and he used to say, "Oh, we'll have to rechip them." That was his metaphor. Yeah. Put a new rechip in. Because it needs to be. You need to change the whole being.
And people need to want. To change.
Well, it's a bit like try and get someone to stop smoking. I mean, I smoked, I know it's just, some people could relate to it. I smoked for years and years and years, and I knew it was bad for me. And my wife kept saying, stop smoking. I didn't want to stop smoking.
Well, you didn't want to.
I didn't want to until the point where I was stood outside in the blistering snow coming down at me. I was getting soaking wet, having a fag just before Christmas. I thought, I'm supposed to be doing this because it's supposed to be taking me, relieving all this stuff I'm going through, and actually, what am I doing? So that was it. I'm not smoking again, and that's it. What's the point? What's the point of this? Isn't it?
You were ready, and that's the point. When I used to have lots of people coming to me through my NLP work, and I don't do this kind of work anymore. Loads of people who can do it far better than I ever could. But people would come to me and say, "I want to quit smoking," and 9 times out of 10, I'd say, "No, you're not ready. Come back when you're ready," and turn them away.
Yeah.
And of course, what they're not getting. Sorry, I'm giving away the tricks of the trade here. So. I'm not a part of an association I can get struck off from, so that's okay. But the point is, being sent away and told to come back when you're ready, that immediately gives them the will to be ready. What do you mean I'm ready?
Yeah, I'm ready for this.
What do you mean? I'm ready.
Yeah, how dare you?
How dare you?
Yeah,
and suddenly they'll come back a few weeks later and they're ready and they've flicked it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff I do as well. And if someone doesn't want to be helped, then you can, no matter what you do, you can't help them, can you?
No.
It doesn't work.
And we shouldn't try and help everybody either. You know, it's very easy to drop into that savior mode, and we can't save everybody else. The first person we need to save is ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
And if other people then hear what you're about, or they see what I'm doing, or they read a book or see me speaking, and then they come to me and say help, I will do.
Yeah.
But that's not the same as kind of that crusader energy I think so many of us go into when we learn a skill set and see, I can help them, they might not want to be helped. And actually it's a bit insulting to go and force your help on somebody.
Yeah, yeah, it's true, because people, does that make
sense? We're not God.
No, professors, but yeah, I know what you mean. You think, well, that's works, I can work on, and you have to identify that there's certain individuals that you won't be able to help or don't want your help. So
precisely.
Leave them to it until someone else might help them.
Yeah. But let them know you're there, get out there, you know, make everyone aware of what you can offer, and then when they're ready, they can come to you. You don't need to chase people to save.
No, that's really good. Yeah, correct. So what advice would you give to people that are sat there and want to move out of that situation, or want to, or in a corporate role like you was?
Yeah.
So thinking, I'm not enjoying this. And there's this, it's like you talk about the ladder being up the wall, but actually this is a massive leap off a cliff down to the beach, isn't it?
Oh, huge.
So what would you advise, if anything?
Well, one of the best pieces of advice I ever had that helped me to leap, and here's where I'm going to go a bit tree-huggy again. I was talking to a Cherokee medicine woman one day, just as you do.
Yeah.
And she said to me, Taz, you have to remember the biggest reason that people neglect to take a leap of faith is that they forget the Creator will catch them.
Oh.
Now, I don't care if you believe in God, Great Spirit, the universe, whatever, even if you want to think of yourself, if you have another purpose, if your life isn't fitting you, you've got to remember that even if you don't believe in some big universal force, if that drive in you is enough, that will catch you.
Yes.
Something will catch you. And I don't want to get to the end of my life slowly creeping towards the crypt, thinking, I wish I'd done this, I wish I'd done that. Having played it safe, I want to skid in there and go, wow, that was a trip.
Yeah, yeah. And I wish I could do it again, but
I don't believe you only have one life, but this is the one you've got now.
Yeah.
And it ain't a dress rehearsal. So sometimes,
no, it's not.
Sometimes it's scary, but sometimes in order to live, in order to be able to say yes to life and really embrace that, you got to feel the fear and do it anyway.
Right. So we're getting towards the end of this show, and we're going to do something else in a minute for another show. So where can people actually find you? Where can people get hold of you?
If you just search Taz Thornton, you can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/Taz Thornton Official. You can find me on Twitter, Taz Thornton. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, www.tazthornton.com.
Brilliant. It's been wonderful to speak to you and finally meet you.
Finally.
After all this time. That's why I came over, just to meet you today, which is great. So thanks for being on the show. Good luck with what you're doing. And I'm sure we'll see more of each other in the future.
Thank you for inviting me.
Cheers.
Pleasure.
Yeah, once you're really good. Taz, she's an amazing individual. Wonderful. Really, really nice. So, yeah, please go and check her out. And what she said was, well, what an adversity case that was, and on a massive self-destruction mission. And how many other people are currently going through that or are like that? And I think if you're like that yourself, just have a think about what you're doing, because what you might leave behind might be not be very nice for everybody else. So we can obviously be in this fog and this depressed state, and it's not always as bad as it seems. So if you are feeling a bit down and in the dumps and the doldrums, why don't go and seek some advice from someone and try and get some help. And as you can see, Taz has really turned her life around, and she's out motivating other people. And for me, that's why I interview a lot of people like that, because these adversity episodes or incidents can propel us into something different, something new. So you might think that you're experiencing a lot of heartache at the moment, but I can assure you it will get better. Nothing's as bad as it seems. So I wanted just to tell you what's going on in the world at the moment, in my little world. I've recently become a columnist for a magazine called dyslexiamagazine.com, which is, I think, it's absolutely mind-blowing, because I'm dyslexic. So I'm telling you that because if it's something you want to do and you're passionate about something, go and do it. Don't let anything stop you. So that is now on the internet. So I've had a load of comments and feedback, which is really good, and I really appreciate people that have spent the time doing that. And I'm also going to be at an expo in Birmingham on the 30th of this month, or next month, sorry, 30th of March. And that's what I'm going to be doing now. I'm going to be video interviewing people, guests on the day, people that have got stands at the expo, and also the keynote speakers. So check that out. That's the Business Growth Show in Birmingham. So if you want to know a bit more about me, about that, just cook up with me and I'll tell you. So just search Kurt Pickstone and you'll find me. And like I was saying earlier on, the radio station, there's been a lot of effort put in, a lot of changes happening. So please go and check the website out if you've done it in the past or you've never done it. Go over to radiowarwickshire.com. You'll see all the presenters on there that are currently on there. You'll see sort of stuff we're doing. There's playlists. There's ways of contacting them. Contacting the presenters. And what we're also looking for, if anyone's out there, is any unsigned bands. People that have got a band that would like to get involved or would like us to air them for you, then there's a way of, if you go on the website, there's a way of sending your MP3s for us to review and then potentially play it, because this is a social radio and it's all about bringing you people along. It's about encouraging people to do stuff and things that are really passionate about. So I'd do that as well. So yeah, check it out. It's really good. Yeah, there's also a Facebook page as well for Radio Warwickshire. So that's another way you can interact with us, communicate with us and see what's going on. Like I keep saying, there's some great stuff going on at the moment. We're all really excited to bring you some new guests, some new presenters. Anyway, thank you. Well, that's the end of the show again, people. Hope you enjoyed that. I did. What a great guest. Don't forget, head over to radiowarwickshire.com. I'll keep banding on about it because it's important. Don't forget to come back next week and get ready for yeah, please tell people about this. It might help someone. Yeah, and like I say, why not hook up with us? Contact me. If you've got an interesting story, then I could get you on the show. Until next week. See you later.
Oh, yeah. The Dougie Stone Show.